Dalton with Are We There Yet? Sun Sounds from Tucson, Arizona.
Today I'll read two fascinating stories, and I understand that 80% of the listeners for this show are 60 years old and older. That's certainly not too late to do your own traveling, but I know I have friends that choose not to or can't travel a lot that do like to experience things vicariously through other stories. So in these programs, I like to offer a mix of how to travel yourself if you have limited vision, but also share other people's experiences who have traveled. After all, we can't all go everywhere, and others' experiences can give us a hint about where we might go or where we'd rather not. This article is from Unlocking the World, CNN Travel's weekly newsletter, entitled, She Completely Lost Her Sight, Then She Decided to Travel the World. On a recent trip to New York City, Sassy Wyatt stood atop the Empire State Building, the wind in her hair soaking up the experience. I heard a helicopter flying by. I heard the sirens. I heard the birds. I heard people around me. I could smell the grittiness of the air. Where it's part clean air and part dusty is the only way I can explain it. And then feeling the kind of rattling, that's what it felt like, the rattling of the building underneath my feet. Wyatt tells CNN Travel. I realized how high up I was. Wyatt, who is now in her early 30s, lost her sight completely about a decade ago. The recent trip to New York was her second time in the city. She also visited before she became blind back when she was 16. As she stood at the top of the Empire State Building, Wyatt reflected on the differences between these two trips. I couldn't really tell the enormity and the vastness of where I was in retrospect to when I was sighted at 16 years old, says Wyatt. I couldn't tell the scale of the size of the buildings and the vast expanse of what I could see beyond and how everything got tinier and tinier the further away it was. Of course, I couldn't experience that in the same way that a sighted person can. But Wyatt felt like she had a greater appreciation of the essence of New York this time round, as she focused on absorbing the city with her other four senses. Plus, standing next to Wyatt on the 102nd floor was her best friend, who described the view of the sea of skyscrapers, in her words, through her eyes. And as she stood there, Wyatt had an acute sense of the spirit, the atmosphere of New York. The city felt fun and exciting and overwhelming. The experience brought the city to life for her in a different way. And for Wyatt, this experience epitomizes why she loves traveling, because not despite of the fact she's lost her sight. Wyatt grew up in the UK with parents who prioritized travel. She recalls happy times spent on camping trips, caravan trips, and then further afield to Europe for one, sometimes 2 week all-inclusives. Then, age 7, Wyatt broke her arm. I was trying to out-tomboy my friend, jump off the swing at the highest point and do all the crazy stuff that 6-, 7-, and 8-year-olds do. A broken arm was unfortunate, but didn't seem like anything much to worry about. No one was overly concerned until shortly after the injury, when Wyatt started experiencing unexplained swelling across her body. Doctors investigated, and Wyatt was diagnosed with arthritis, which had started attacking her organs, causing swelling and discomfort. She spent much of her childhood as a wheelchair user. Then, at 14, the arthritis started to impact Wyatt's eyesight. I started to have a lot of inflammation and pain in my eyes, and my eyes were getting very painful as well as bloodshot, recalls Wyatt. My vision started to go a bit blurry. In her teens, Wyatt was registered blind, although she still retained some of her vision. It was a blow, but Wyatt's parents had fostered in her a strong belief that travel was for everybody. She'd traveled as a wheelchair user through most of her childhood, and her family had adopted the attitude of, "We'll figure it out. If we don't have the answer, we'll find someone that does," as Wyatt puts it. It was this mindset that led Wyatt and her partner to RSVP yes to a friend's wedding in Malta in 2016. It was to be Wyatt's first trip abroad since losing her sight. The couple tried to travel without any expectations, without putting any undue pressure on themselves. "We just had it as a break and as a quite relaxing holiday where I got to see my friend get married," says Wyatt. "Except for the fact that I broke my leg whilst in Malta. We look at it now, especially, as quite an amusing experience that the first time I ever plucked up the courage to go and be abroad completely blind, I go throw myself off a cliff and break my leg. I couldn't have a fear of traveling or leaving my country or leaving my own front door," she says adamantly. "Because accidents can happen at any time to anybody. It doesn't matter whether you're blind or not." Plus, on Wyatt's next trip abroad, she had an extra support in the form of her guide dog, Ida. The duo headed to Rotterdam in the Netherlands to attend a travel conference. It was the first time Wyatt had traveled on a plane solo, or at least without another human. She wasn't really alone. Ida was there by her side the whole time. Ida's role in Wyatt's life was transformative. When the duo travel, she guides Wyatt through the airport, through train stations, and helps her find her way in hotel rooms, vacation rentals, on cruise ships. "I feel like she's given me my brain power back," says Wyatt of her guide dog. "She allowed me to get lost but feel safe getting lost." Around the time Ida entered Wyatt's life, Wyatt started a blog called Blind Girl Adventures, chronicling her travels. Wyatt grew her following quickly and started going to more travel conferences and industry meetups. Along the way, she met people who traveled for a living and realized that while they all shared a passion for traveling, Wyatt was often one of the only disabled people in the room. "People were interested in my lived experience, how I travel, how I do things, and how other destinations can make their marketing or their digital inclusion or their hotels, their clients, the whole aspect of travel, how they could make it better for disabled people," says Wyatt. And then that light bulb flicked on. "I realized I could scale this into making it into a career." Today, Wyatt works full-time as a travel and accessibility consultant with a goal to help change the landscape of accessible tourism. On social media and on her blog, she speaks candidly about her experience, the good and the bad. She posts videos explaining how she takes in the in-flight safety demonstrations and blogs about how to book special assistance in the airport. Wyatt's honest about the frustrations and limitations of traveling while blind, such as the need to arrive at airports much earlier than other travelers. She also embraces humor and gives her followers tips and ideas of what to do on their vacations. "When I travel, it's about embracing the moment," says Wyatt. "Whether that's meeting a local person in a cafe and speaking to them about how they built their business or being on an excursion with a bunch of travel bloggers, and when the tour guide says, "Hey, who fancies hiking down the side of the gorge, being the only one to say yes?" Wyatt always does a lot of research before undertaking her trip, usually looking at blogs, books, and articles to get a sense of her destination. Most people, if they're traveling and really trying to throw you into the experience that they've had, they will write with all five senses, how they've seen it and how they've expressed it and how it made them feel, says Wyatt. Wyatt engages with podcasts and travel videos, too. She especially enjoys when the footage includes the natural soundtrack of the birds in the background or the motorbike whizzing by. When film clips get overlaid with music, Wyatt finds it a bit frustrating. Before heading on the airplane, Wyatt also studies the language of her destination and learns key phrases so she can explain her needs and requirements to hoteliers, Uber drivers, and anyone else she might come into contact with. "What I love about travel is the unknown excitement that you can get from it," she says. "Yes, you can plan it to the nth degree, and you can have an itinerary that makes your time worthwhile in that country or in that destination, but it's about saying yes to the unexpected and seeing where it takes you." Wyatt describes herself as an open book who loves making new connections when she travels. She enjoys chatting to strangers on buses and trains, answering their questions and enlightening them on the reality of her situation and experience as a blind woman traveling in the world. Meanwhile, on social media, Wyatt loves it when she can convert someone who approaches her page with negativity or skepticism and instead invite them into her world. For example, one of the most common questions she gets is how can she read the Instagram comments and reply if she can't see? In response, Wyatt will politely explain that she uses the accessibility features inbuilt within smartphones. Wyatt also gets some commenters question her love of traveling. "People ask me, if you can't see, why would you bother traveling?" In response, Wyatt tells them how she engages with places with her other senses and gets to know destinations in different ways. And while she comes face to face with the occasional troll, Wyatt is largely followed by people who are inspired and entertained by her content, from people looking to be better allies to disabled travelers to people who live with disabilities themselves. Wyatt isn't necessarily setting out to be inspirational. She's just being herself and is always looking to learn from others' experiences, too. Still, she loves getting messages from people who say her content has motivated them to travel to a big city with their visually impaired child for the first time or prompted them to book a trip they've been anxious about, knowing their guide dog will be in tow. While Wyatt has a positive mindset, she is also open about the limitations she experiences. Navigating airports can be difficult, for example. Public transportation options can be frustratingly limited, and Wyatt's only traveled with her guide dog within Europe, where she feels protected under European accessibility access laws, and because taking Ida further afield could be complicated. On her honeymoon to Jamaica, for example, Wyatt left Ida at home as she was concerned her dog, used to cold British climes, wouldn't adapt well to the heat. Despite Ida's absence, it was a fantastic trip, and Wyatt and her husband made the vacation work for them both. Wyatt says her husband is a great travel partner and an excellent guide. "He's very good at describing the world around me," she says. "He's very good at explaining things in museums, and he loves people watching. So he explains things like that to me, which I find really fascinating." Wyatt and her husband are a good team, but they do have slightly different travel styles. Wyatt's husband would happily lie on a beach all day or restaurant hop, while she's more of an adrenaline junkie. She loves kayaking or rock climbing or zip lining, things like that, even just hikes. In general, Wyatt always enjoys feeling that she's at one with nature, at one with the people that I'm with. And while she's always been a bit of a thrill seeker, Wyatt suggests there is also a correlation between her love of adventure sports and her lack of vision. You don't have to have sight to appreciate the thrill of adventure, explains Wyatt. She adores experiencing the wind rushing through her hair and her clothes when she's on a zip line, or feeling the gushing water and everyone screaming with laughter or bashing off the riverbanks and stuff and people getting stuck during whitewater rafting. I just find the chaos of adventure fun, says Wyatt, laughing. So here's a shorter story by Lynn Mauby, travel writer, riding the rails, learning to dog sled in Alaska. As the Alaska sky gradually turned indigo in the fading light, the scraping of ice and frantic, unheeded commands to my sled dog team broke the stillness. Thundering down the frozen waterway in the sub-zero temperature, I snatched glimpses over my shoulder. Where was Mike, my guide? And was he aware I was now some miles away with the gap increasing by the minute? Out exploring in the early evening, an irresistible scent had wafted by my lead dog's keen nose. Following primal instincts over my instructions, he wheeled around and led the obliging pack in the opposite direction at full speed. Applying all my weight to the hook brake barely scratched the smooth surface of the ice. It saved me from fishtailing wildly from side to side, but did nothing to slow the charge. The evening chats with Mike over the last few days had provided enough insight to know that if we lost each other entirely, I was in trouble. I had nothing, no extra clothing, no shelter, but more importantly, nothing to start a fire. We had seen wolf tracks regularly, so fire seemed particularly important to me at that moment. It was March, the tail end of the long, cold winter in this region of the Alaskan interior. Roads were closed, rivers were frozen, and the only access was by air. A long journey from Australia by plane, train, and mail plane had landed me in the tiny Yukon community of Eagle, a fascinating, history-packed community of timber dwellings, home to 85 residents. Still spellbound from gazing at the enormity of the Alaskan wilderness, I had stepped from the small aircraft to be wrapped in a bear hug. Such is the warmth of the people out here. The first order of business, appropriate gear. Donning Arctic-grade overalls, jacket, and boots, my 120-pound frame morphed into something resembling a sumo wrestler. The jumping-off point for my 10-day expedition was my host's log cabin, a jarring 4.5-mile snowmobile trip down the frozen Yukon River. Here, Wayne and Scarlett lived sustainably, hunting, fishing, and gathering, consciously leaving a minimal footprint. They've enjoyed many years of wilderness expeditions and now provide opportunities for adventurous souls to experience their lifestyle firsthand. Driving a mushing team well is harder than it looks. I had imagined riding along, feet comfortably planted on the rails, totally relaxed and smiling pleasantly while gazing at the passing landscape. The reality? Anticipating your team, the surface ahead, possible camber, which are tilts in the trail, and corrective maneuvers make it a much more physical endeavor. The ice highway can be anything from porcelain smooth to oversized ice cubes. Slam one of those on a sideways slide and you could be scrambling for your spot messaging device. but winding through the spruce forest on soft, snow-covered lines is a delight. Crossing a small lake's glassy surface, I look down to see designs befitting the most exquisite crystalware, bubbles of all shapes and sizes suspended in time, cascading into the dark depths. It pays to remember that a dog sled doesn't behave like a car. Once the lead dog passes the last tree on a bend, he will turn. The rest all follow. If you aren't prepared, T-boning the tree is the inevitable and embarrassing result, so you learn early that weight shift is your friend. Climbing slopes in more mountainous areas, you don't get a free ride. No, you step off and push, all the while providing verbal encouragement to your team. The downhill portion is a mix of sheer exhilaration, terror, and expletives. Then there's overflow ice, which is liquid water sitting on top of a frozen layer. Think of a slushy minus the coloring. Knee-deep, it's wet, freezing, exhausting, and fun. Is there any more around we can do, Mike? I asked excitedly. He looked at me like I was nuts. There were, of course, many spills. Toward the end of one adrenaline-charging downhill run, I gracefully landed in a soft pillow of white. Another was much less dignified as the sled crashed onto its side and my team continued on with their inept operator horizontal in the ice, attached only by my hands. Each evening we settled in at a different location, often a trapper or old miner's cabin, where our teams were secured and cared for. They are your lifeline and your escape route, so their health and well-being are paramount. Only after this did we collect snow or ice for water and cut firewood. The night skies were nature's artwork, a ceiling of stars on dark nights, or flooded with rippling emerald-green curtains, the northern aurora. The most memorable night? Using only nature's materials, we shoveled, hacked, and sawed, creating a lean-to shelter that kept us safe and warm in the 0 degree Fahrenheit, or minus 18 degrees centigrade temperature. A reflective wall of logs threw the pit fire's heat under our makeshift roof as Mike spoke with passion about life out here, the connection with nature, the joy of relative freedom, the changing seasons and associated challenges. As I burrowed down for the night, fire crackling in the stillness, the howling of wolves drifting to us, it was a moment of complete and utter contentment, an immense gratitude for this remarkable journey. Exactly how far I traveled through the twilight with my errant team, I'll never know. Thankfully, our detour didn't have a dramatic end in the fangs of a wolf pack. Only when fatigued did the team slow and glide to a halt, Mike rounding the bend some time later on his way to locate me. In their excitement to be reunited, our teams headed straight for each other and entangled themselves, creating rope spaghetti to unravel. As a way to celebrate my 50th year, I went on the hunt for a genuinely authentic encounter. There could not have been a better match. In a world where it's increasingly challenging to find off-grid and untainted adventures, this one was a gem. Lastly, some of you might be looking for some exotic place to go for Christmas. Vanima, Lapland, Finland. While popular lore would have us believe the North Pole is the official home of Santa Claus and his jolly missus, the Finns would have us believe otherwise. For them, Rovaniemi is Christmas headquarters, located just north of the Arctic Circle in Lapland. Children here make gingerbread cookies with Mrs. Claus, enroll in elf school, or take a calligraphy class and compose their Christmas wish lists with a traditional quill. You may also want to visit the Renua Wildlife Park, home to baby polar bears, wolverines, and moose. Those in search of a truly frosty experience can stay in the Arctic Snow Hotel, made entirely of snow and ice, but equipped with saunas and hot tubs in which to thaw. We've reached the end of our program today. I will end, as I often do, with a thought or two for the day. The first, as everyone knows who has ever heard a piece of gossip, we do not own the facts of our lives at all. This from journalist Janet Malcolm, quoted in Book Forum. And here's another. Stronger than all the armies is an idea whose time has come. That's from Victor Hugo, quoted in the Washington Post.
If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Left click on broadcast info and audio, then under programming links, left click on demand podcast. You can now listen to Sunsounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.
Come on and get your kicks on route 666.